So today I'm going to tell you about some work we've been doing on distributed file systems. And the motivation for our work is basically looking at existing distributed file systems and noticing some alarming trends. They're offering weak guarantees. They may be eventually consistent. GFS says it's consistent but undefined. They offer narrow interfaces. Your local file system offers full POSIX, and your distributed file system doesn't even offer you the ability to write within the middle of a file. Your writes must be sequential and concurrent writing is prohibited. They also have an unscalable design. You might require full bisection bandwidth or a very large master server that limits the size of the cluster. So inspired by noticing these problems, we designed WTF, or the Warp Transactional File System. And the key insight here is that it uses the file slicing abstraction to provide strong guarantees and some new zero-copy file system interfaces. And those zero-copy interfaces then can be used to build the full POSIX API. So we get strong guarantees. Specifically, you can do transactions that span multiple files. You have an expanded interface, and you have a scalable design. Our design doesn't have a master server or require a CLOS network to actually work. So the zero-copy APIs that we're introducing are different from the traditional APIs. In a traditional file system, everything is about bytes. You're passing bytes to the file system, you're reading bytes from the file system. In our interface, you are reading references to bytes in the file system, and then you can write those same bytes elsewhere without actually copying the data across the interface. So you have yank, which is analogous to a read. You can read a large section of a file without actually reading that data. You can then write that data elsewhere by pasting it. You can quickly append to a file concurrently, or you can concatenate multiple files together. Take many files that are the output of a MapReduce job and merge them without ever having to rewrite the underlying data. And the way we do this is the file slicing abstraction. And central to this abstraction is the notion of a slice. A slice is a sequence of bytes. It's immutable, and the file is just a overlay of these slices to represent the contents of the file. So here you can see we have three different slices that are overlaid. When you flatten them, you get the file's contents. What enables this abstraction to provide all the guarantees I was telling you about is the architecture of WTF itself. We separate the metadata storage from the storage servers. And the metadata storage is a scalable key value store. Specifically, we used Hyperdex Warp. And the storage servers are a custom implementation. But this design allows us to take the transactional guarantees of Hyperdex Warp and expand them to cover the entire file system. So we can take the guarantees provided by Warp and provide guarantees across all of WTF. What's stored in Hyperdex are pointers to the data. I mentioned that we have these slices that are overlaid. The slices themselves reside on the storage servers. Here you can see there's two slices that are on different storage servers, and there's pointers to these slices from Hyperdex. And those pointers directly say where to get the data. It says the server, a particular chunk of data on that server, and then the range of bytes that that slice occupies within that chunk. And this enables us to easily manipulate slices, as you'll see in a second. So let's walk through a basic example of how you'd write to the file system. When you write, you create a slice, and then you install into Hyperdex a reference to that slice, or a pointer to that slice, to create the actual file's content. So if you look at the top of the screen, you'll see the representation of the file at any given point in time. Currently, it's just our first write, that it's those 2 megabytes at offset 0. If we write a second write, we'll once again write the slice to the storage servers, put into Hyperdex a pointer to that slice, and specify the offset at which that slice is overlaid in the resulting file. So here you can see slices A and B. And of course, you can seek around the file. We allow you to do that. And you can write in the middle of the file. And when you write in the middle of the file, you once again create a slice, install a slice pointer. And here you can see that slice pointer C is at 1 megabyte. And so the resulting file is 1 megabyte of A 2 megabytes of C and 1 megabyte of B. In the resulting, or in the underlying storage, A and B are unmodified. But in the file representation, A and B have been overwritten. And so the immutability of slices comes into play here. At any time, you can read the list of slice pointers for a file and reconstruct that file's contents from the pointers themselves. But that creates some garbage, essentially. It creates pieces of the file that were written but are no longer referenced. And we use a process called compaction to reduce the size of the metadata and eliminate references to these pieces that are no longer readable within the file itself. And essentially, compaction takes the references to the file and changes them so that it references less of the data. And that introduces garbage itself. And garbage is something that's no longer referenced by anywhere in the file system. WTF does a mark and sweep where it scans the entire file system looking for slice pointers. And then the storage servers use the list of in-use slice pointers to decide what garbage to eliminate. So in our running example here, the storage server would eliminate this data. And it can do that by rewriting the underlying storage chunk, or it can use tricks like file punching. ext4, XFS, and a whole host of other file systems allow you to actually create a hole in the middle of a file. Rather than have to rely on this garbage collection and defragmentation method, we offer an alternative technique called locality-aware slice placement that WTF uses in order to eliminate fragmentation when writing files sequentially. So what this does is it uses consistent hashing to map writes to the same file, to the same set of storage servers, and then within those storage servers to the same chunk. And with high probability, sequential writes to a file within WTF will be written sequentially on the storage server to the same chunk. And so here is our running example. We can see that A and B were written sequentially, and they reside next to each other on the storage server. We can replace the pointers to A and B with a single pointer, D, that covers the entire range of A and B. So here we see the start and the end is the start from A and the end from B, and it's the entire range on disk. So here is where the direct representation of the slice pointer comes into play. It enables us to directly do this. So now you have a single slice pointer representing the entire file. And you can do a lot of interesting applications with this. So we built a few, and I'm going to walk you through them right now. So you can do your standard MapReduce sort. So if you have your input file on the far left, your output file on the far right, you're going to divide the file into buckets, append each data record to the buckets, sort each bucket individually, and then merge the files to create an output file. And the important thing to note here is that we can use the concat operation to merge the output file. So we don't have to read each of the sorted buckets and write them to one output file. We can just merge all of the buckets in one fell swoop. So this leads to some performance advantages. So we did a qualitative analysis against comparison against HDFS, and we saw HDFS takes more than an hour to sort records that are 512K in size. WTF takes less than 20 minutes. But what's really important to notice is that when you break it down by time spent in each part of the process, HDFS spends a large percentage of its time in the bucketing stage because it can't rapidly append to the buckets. Sorting, they're roughly comparable. WTF is a little slower than HDFS. But during merging, HDFS has to rewrite the entire set of buckets to create the output file. WTF doesn't do any of that. So it almost, if you look very carefully, you can see that it registers that it did take some time, but it took next to no time compared to HDFS. So the real win here is that you can merge the output of the sort using the file slicing API without actually having to rewrite any data. We can also use the fast concurrent modifications to implement a work queue. So a lot of applications are built on top of a queue. And one way you can implement a queue on a file system is just to continually append to a file and have consumers of the queue scan through the file looking for data to consume. And so here we did the same thing on top of both HDFS and WTF, and we can see that WTF offers a larger degree of concurrency than HDFS for such a work queue. You could also build a video editor on top of WTF. So we've all seen Pulp Fiction. We know that it's out of order, and editors like to move scenes around. And when you move the scenes around, if you want to play the movie for someone who might be offering critical feedback, you don't want to have to re-render the entire movie each time. So often there's a tight integration between the editor and the video player. Instead of doing that, WTF enables you to do something different. You can write the movie out to the file system, use file slicing to move the scenes around in the resulting movie, and then play it using any off-the-shelf editor. And we did exactly that. We built an application, I call it the Pulp Fictionizer. And it takes any Blu-ray and will reorder the scenes randomly on the file system. So we took Hot Fuzz, we dumped it to raw 1080p footage, and we reordered the scenes randomly in both HDFS and WTF, and it was the same random permutation. HDFS took over approximately 3 hours to rewrite the entire movie in the newly cut order. WTF took 16 seconds. That's effectively 23 gigabytes per second on a cluster that only has 1 gigabyte per second of disk I/O. So we're effectively faster than our underlying hardware. You also can do interactive transactions, and I know everyone in the room can identify with this example. We've all been caffeine deprived at 3 a.m. or apparently during this session, and we've typed rm-rf star and lost all of our data. Well, the transactional nature of WTF allows you to begin a transaction, do something, maybe exploratory data analysis, and then commit or abort the transaction depending on how that exploratory analysis comes out, or if you make a mistake, you can just abort, and you're back to where you started before you began the transaction. We've done some micro benchmarking to see how WTF stacks up to other systems. Here we ran WTF, HDFS, and EXT4 with the same micro benchmark just to see how the systems stack up. And they're roughly comparable. They're all bound by the speed of the disk. But everybody's probably skeptical, how can you possibly have transactions and not pay a cost? Well, there is a slight cost. We are not always faster than HDFS. Specifically, when you're doing traditional file system operations where you're passing bytes through the interface, you might have a performance bottleneck as the writes get smaller in size. But there's a good reason for that. And so if we take and look at the left-hand side of the graph where the writes are extremely small, we can see that HDFS achieves the low throughput. And if you were to take and eliminate all the costs of doing a write within WTF, except for the metadata, and the metadata took approximately 10 milliseconds to write, this is the theoretical maximum throughput you could achieve with WTF. Our experimentally evaluated throughput is this blue line that you see. And if you were to be able to reduce the metadata cost to 1 millisecond, this is the maximum throughput you would see. So the important thing to note is that WTF does have a lower throughput for the smaller writes, as you can see in this graph, but it's not necessarily inherent. With a faster metadata server, you could achieve higher throughput than it currently achieves. It's also a real system. We've spent a lot of time building the system. We added fault tolerance to it. The details are in the paper, but the intuition behind the fault tolerance is for every slice you write, you actually write it to each replica, and then you store multiple slice pointers in the metadata so that there's a slice pointer for each replica instead of a slice pointer for just one slice. So here we killed one server at the 30-second mark. We can see the throughput gets a little rough in between 30 and 40 seconds. At the 40-second mark, that server is declared dead and not coming back. The system reconfigures, and then the system goes on working thereafter. And there's a lot of work that's come before us on distributed file systems and transactional file systems, and I'd like to talk a little bit about some of it. So most notably is Farsight, which took a Byzantine fault-tolerant protocol, used it to manage the metadata, and used some cryptography to ensure the integrity of the data referenced by the metadata. And what we're doing is we're taking and using a transactional scalable key value store for the metadata and using it to construct the file system's contents. So there's a parallel there in the technique that's used. Within file systems designed for the data center setting, KelvinFS is an existing transactional file system. It doesn't allow you to do the fully general transactions that we do. It requires you to do exploratory reads, and you have to basically pre-declare all of your transactions in advance. And among transactional file systems, there's been a whole host of them, but save for KelvinFS, they've all been confined to a single server. So they don't perform in the distributed setting. So what I want you to take away from this talk today is that there's a new area to explore in the space of distributed file systems. Not only can we design file systems to be strongly consistent and transactional using transactional key value stores, but there's new APIs to be explored as well. The file slicing API enables you to read and write faster than the underlying disk itself. And so I'd like to encourage everybody to consider APIs that go beyond the limits of the actual physical hardware and enable applications that would otherwise be impractical or just slow. And with that, I'll take questions.
So one thing you didn't show is, you take your HDFS example. You run an HDFS job, costs a lot to write the output.
Yes.
What if that is subject to a whole lot of read later? It seems like you're now, by manipulating all the pointers, causing the subsequent reads to be a lot of random reads, whereas having actually rewritten the data, you get sequential read operations.
So there is a trade-off here, and it's up to the application. So we didn't show that in the sorting example. I'm going to go back to here. So you are right that if each individual record in this example is written using just slice pointers, yank and paste, you could encounter fragmentation when you read later. We go into detail in the paper describing how on the first read through a fragmented file, we will actually defragment it so that subsequent reads will not cause a problem. You also could just do a traditional MapReduce here.
Do you show the penalty for that?
We didn't measure it.
The defrag penalty?
We didn't measure it, but it would be easy to measure. It's essentially reading the different fragmented pieces. But the point is that here you don't have to use yank and paste. You could use read and write. You could copy everything, and you would still get the benefit of the merge at the end where the buckets are big, so you're only pasting big chunks, large contiguous regions, and you would still save 1,800 seconds in that case.
Good. Thanks.
Hi, Joel from ETH Zurich. So one thing I was wondering whether you can say a few words about how these methods would apply to newer storage technologies, because for me I was thinking, for instance, like the zero, like the this smart way of essentially reassembling files sounds like a great thing to do for flash or something where reading is very fast and writing will be much slower. Like, can you say a few words about how you see these, you know, in the next few years with maybe new technology, whether these ideas apply or have some benefit which maybe you didn't mention so far?
So we didn't look into particular storage technologies, but if you look at this architecture, you can do anything you want on the storage servers. There's a lot of flexibility here. So if you know that you want to write to something that's really fast, and then you just want something that's really durable, you could actually mix and match in your replication for the fault tolerance. So there's a lot of creative tricks you could play there. We didn't explore any of them.
Thank you.
Ferro, I was curious, what happens if the bucket serve, or this, what the data that you're writing is really small, instead of sector size, say 256 bytes?
So you're talking about for the sorted benchmark?
Yes.
It's going to perform poorly. I showed you the micro benchmark where the small writes perform not as well as you would like.
Okay.
In practice, you would do client-side buffering. We didn't do any client-side buffering because that just boils down to having larger record sizes.
Sure.
And we didn't benchmark the smaller records because, as we cite in the paper, there's a bug in HDFS that prevented us from doing appends with smaller records. So it's really going to come down to whatever your application wants to do.
Right. So this is more oriented to larger blobs of data.
Yeah, it will work with larger blobs of data, but it does permit you to do smaller writes. If smaller writes are your main workload, you're probably better off with a key value store than a file system anyway.
Sure. Hey, thanks.